Good morning, friends. Welcome to another episode of The Gita, Memoirs of a Psychiatrist. We are today going to be discussing chapter 6, which is the yoga of meditation, something that seems to be close to a lot of your hearts and essentially is the pathway to getting to self-realization, which is God. So let's quickly summarize what happened in the first five chapters. This is something that happens in the Gita and the Upanishads and the scriptures all the time. They just review what happened in the first few so that you caught up to date. So in the first chapter, there's a dejection of Arjuna, who is representative of you and me. He has trained his whole life, has fought a million battles. He's one of the most sought after warrior there is. He has never lost any battle. And yet, when he's on the battlefield faced with a difficult situation, which is fighting his own cousins who are evil, he just loses his nerve, drops his weapons down and says, I can't do this. This has happened to all of us sometime or the other. So he becomes dejected and we become aware of our own sorrow, our own bondage to this world and our own emotions. And he's confused and deluded about his own self. And Krishna starts talking to him towards after a long time when Arjuna basically says, I succumb, I give up, you help me. He doesn't talk, Krishna doesn't talk until that time, which has significance in and of itself. Mm. And in the second chapter, we start getting a solution from Krishna, the Lord, to this situation. And the solution is Sankhya, which is knowledge. And it concludes in the description of a Sthita Prajna. A Sthita Prajna is a self-realized soul, and we talked about that, what a Sthita Prajna is. In the third chapter, we attain the state of oneness through meditation. We are taught about Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga is service with a sacrifice, selfless service with a sacrifice, and by doing that, you're burning off your vasanas, your desires, and your thoughts become less, and therefore your mind becomes quieter. When your mind becomes more pure, you experience more and more joy, and you become a jignasa, which is a person who has thirst for knowledge. And in the fourth chapter, Krishna teaches us that all karmas conclude in knowledge, and it leads to karma sannyasa, which is knowledge. It's the same train. It's, if you look at a train, you're getting on at station A, the train goes to station B, from station B it goes to station C, and ultimately to your end of your destination. It depends on where you get on the train. But this next stop is sannyasa, which is the gaining of knowledge, and also vairagya, which means renunciation. Renunciation of, don't mistake this, renunciation of not possessions and house and car and stuff like that, but renunciation of the possessive attitude that you have, that we all have, towards our possessions or the I-ness, the me, mm-hmm. all of that, renunciation of that. And in the fifth chapter, Krishna explains karma sannyas in more detail, so that he explains that we should not think I am the doer of all of this. I, which is the small I, am the doer of all of this. Now comes the sixth chapter, which is meditation in detail. He talks about the meaning of meditation, the result of meditation, what happens at that point, how to prepare for meditation, the indicators of the state of reaching the state where you can meditate, etc. So let's start. This is a long chapter as compared to chapter 5, which was a short one. This is called in Sanskrit Dhyana Yoga. Dhyan means meditation or concentration. And it's all in English, it's the yoga of meditation. Krishna says in verse 1, he who does his obligatory duty without depending on the fruit of action, he is a sannyasi and a yogi, not the one without fire and not the one without action. So you'll see that from verse 1 to 7, basically he keeps talking about the difference between a yogi and a sannyasi and how you get to be a person who is ready for meditation. So bear with us at this point, because the first 9 verses describe yogi to sannyasi to jnani. He's talking about station A to station B to station C.
Right.
And you can get on the train at any point and it'll still lead you to that same destination. But if you do get on at station A, then this is what you have to do. So he's saying that whatever duty, whatever obligatory duty you have, what you must do, things that you know are right for you, your neighbor falls, you don't say, well, I'm sorry, I'm late for work, I gotta go. You gotta help him. That's your obligatory duty. You got married, you chose to get married, your obligatory duty is to your spouse. You had children, your obligatory duty is to your children. You still have a duty to other children and other human beings, but you have made a decision to get married and you must fulfill that responsibility to your wife or your husband and your children. So the first step is doing karma yoga, and he says that whatever obligatory you do, you cannot depend on the fruit of action. Do it. You need to take your neighbor. He fell down, got hurt badly. You want to take him to the hospital. You're late for work, but you say, listen, this is what I got to do. But your duty is to take him to the hospital, deposit him in the care of the emergency room, the doctors, etc. Your duty is not for you to get the fruit of the action, not for him to say, oh, my goodness, you did such a good thing for me, praise you, or the result of what happens once he gets to the emergency room. And not the one without fire, meaning whatever you do, don't think that you're just because a person is a yogi and a sannyasi, he doesn't have fire inside him. Because whatever enthusiasm you have, energy to get it done, rajas to get it done, that's recognized by people around you as fire. This person is very fiery. He's got fire in his voice. He's got fire in his words. He's got energy. We should not think of a holy man, a yogi, a sannyasi, as being so passive and quiet that he has no fire. He's saying very clearly in this that you can be a yogi, a sannyasi, ready for meditation, getting ready for meditation, but it's not assumed that this person has no fire in him, or not the one without action. Meaning, even a person like this does act. Don't for a minute think he just sits behind under a banyan tree and meditates all day. So whatever action he takes, whatever thoughts he has, is also, don't forget, a product of all his previous lives and all the inscriptions on his prakriti. This hard drive that he carries, his mind, is the product of many, many lives and what he's written on there. So all of this must be resolved first by station A to station B. You're doing your karma yoga. You get rid of your vasanas, your desires, so that your mind is a little calmer. Now comes verse 2, where he says, know yoga to be that which they call as sannyasa, which is station B. None indeed becomes a yogi without renouncing sankalpa. Now, sankalpa means thoughts and actions. Our thoughts are constantly going. When you try to meditate, when you reach that point, when you close your eyes, you will see that your thoughts are going a mile a minute. And you think about internal things and external things. And if there's, so for example, you're closing your eyes, you think that you want to meditate, that you're ready for meditation, your stomach starts to growl, makes a loud, it's quiet.
Yeah.
And you'll see what he tells you what to do with you. You have experience with this, Luke?
I have. I've been there, yes.
Yeah. So it's quiet, everything, you've prepared it, and then your stomach makes a loud growling sound. What happens? Your mind immediately, because it hears through its sense organs, the ears, even though the eyes are closed, there's no, it is so attuned to every little sound. It says, oh, my stomach's growling. Is that because of what I ate, or is it because I haven't eaten?
Right.
Either way, your mind is now immediately in action. So that's from the inside of your body. Let's say there's no stomach growling, but there's a noise from outside, from your neighbor's house, from upstairs. Your mind says, what is that? Who's moving upstairs? What are they doing? Why? Who woke up? That kind of stuff. So that disturbance takes place. And those thoughts, if there's nothing, no stomach growling, nobody making noise outside because it's like in the middle of the night, everybody's asleep, suppose. Then your mind finds things about the past to obsess about,
yes,
about the future, yep, to obsess about. Speaking of which, just an aside for 1 second, bear with me.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of which, recognize that we all say the good old days, right? We say the good old days. oh, those days were so fantastic, those good old days. As if to say these days are not good. But when we pay, there's a difference between seeing something, knowing something is there, and paying attention to it.
Right.
That attention is very, very important. For example, in those good old days, if you were to ask that person, how are you now? It's okay. I'm a little bothered because I'm at school, I'm at college,
right.
I have to study for my exams, I don't know, I have a tough professor, I have tough exams. You'll hear nothing but complaints. Why? Because you're not paying attention. You never pay attention to what is happening to you at that time. You either look at the past or you look at the future.
Right.
And the current position, the present position, just goes by. And then when you get to the future, you look back at the past and say, oh, those days were so good. So just keep that as an attention, something to keep in mind.
Right.
So we were talking about meditation, about the noise upstairs. Your mind goes into the past or the future and keeps disturbing you. That has to be controlled. And that's what he's talking about. Give up everything. Give up everything that is mine, the possessiveness, outside stuff, and you'll find yourself so much better. He doesn't say that you shouldn't have possessions. He says, don't be possessive about it.
Right.
You have a pen, you lose the pen, it's not the end of the world. There was a recent TV program where they said, you know, there's new fad here, right, Lou, in the United States, has been for a while. Give up all your possessions, live without possessions.
Right.
Did you see that on TV?
Sure, yeah.
So Japanese are getting into this, but the Indians have been doing this for centuries, not now, but many thousands of years ago. Have less to yourself. Don't be possessive. And people get less and less attached to their possessions. So our Atman that goes on within us is like a passenger in a rowboat. Imagine that you're in a rowboat and the rowboat is basically being tossed around from side to side when there is a storm.
Right.
You are helpless inside. You get tossed around the rowboat also as the ocean is turbulent, the boat is turbulent, and therefore you are turbulent. Now the Atman is inside your body, your mind, and your intellect,
mm-hmm.
and it is becoming as turbulent as your body, mind, and intellect is. So the trick is for you to be stationary, you meaning the you as the Atman, the big I, to be stationary, even though the rest of the world, which is the ocean, and your body, mind, intellect is rocking, for you to be stationary.
Right.
And you see that in yogis because their eyes are totally still. I'm going on a lot of different paths as we go along today, so forgive me. But talking about the eyes, wherever the eyes go, the mind follows. It's a known fact. You look at something, let's say I'm walking down a busy, crowded street in India
right.
with stores on either side, and I'm looking at all the people dressed in their colorful clothes and the shops and everything, and my mind is going wherever my eyes are going. Suddenly, my eyes see a sweet shop with sweets that I love.
Yeah.
My eyes look at it. Immediately, what happens is the mind follows and says, oh, yeah, you saw a sweet shop. Let's go there. So the eyes go there, the mind follows. Similarly, wherever the mind goes, the eyes follow. So the mind says, this is the street I used to go by all the time. There used to be a sweet shop here when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
The eyes immediately starts to look for sweet shops. So the eyes and the mind are connected very strongly, much more so than the other sense organs. So I was saying that essentially, if you look at a yogi, his eyes are steady. You know, you look at a person whose eyes are shifty all the time, you say there's something a little strange, right?
Right.
You say there's something. It's almost like a natural phenomenon that you say he's shifty-eyed. Am I right, Lou?
Yes.
You heard that term, shifty-eyed?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which means that there's something a little suspicious about him, shifty-eyed. A person who is completely still with his mind under his control, his eyes are not shifty-eyed. They're very steady. A startling noise comes from the sound. You know, we all jump, we turn to look at what had happened with where the noise come. A self-realized person is very steady. Nothing seems to bother him. His eyes don't move, his mind doesn't move. I'm going a little slower. I'm not even finished with chapter 2, verse 2 today. But So, and the reason I'm bringing that up is because when he talks about meditation, he will tell you and us to instruct us that your eyes have to be focused onto the center between your eyebrows. And when you do that, your eyes, it's almost like you're putting handcuffs on them, because the eyes are not used to, we talked about this last time, didn't we, Lou?
Yes.
About the eyes being up there.
Right.
And it, we talked about it being for devotion. But the other realization I came to is that you never look at anything upwards and cross-eyed. You don't see anything.
Right.
So when you do that during meditation, it's almost like you're putting handcuffs on your eyes.
Yeah.
You see less, even though your eyes are closed, but your eyes are upwards and towards the center, your eyes are crossed. So no sight comes to your mind.
You're parking your eyes for a while.
You're parking your eyes and you're shutting off the engine for your eyes. The reason I say that is because your thoughts are often with eyesight included. You think of work. You think of work. You say, oh, my boss yelled at me today. He yelled at me and I embarrassed me in front of everybody. It's not just a thought in terms of sentences. You actually see your boss, you see the your office, you see the people who are standing around hearing your boss yelling at you. Yep. All of that comes as a vision. But
you,
when your
you
eyes
see that
are
suite
upwards
on,
and crossed.
You see that suite on the street that you saw. When you see the shop, you see what you want to buy.
Exactly.
You actually pull
so
a picture
even
of
when
it.
You're meditating, if you put your eyes up towards the center between your eyebrows and you cross them, you will find that there's less of these visions that you see. Okay, moving on. By giving up the small eye, you enter into meditation. The more you meditate, the more inner joy you experience. The more joy you get, the more you can find easier to drop your little eye. So we talked about the path of action being the initial earlier stage, because you want to get rid of your vasanas. You want to do selfless service. And by doing that, you sacrifice and you get rid of your desires. And the second is the path of renunciation, which is sannyasa. They're all the same path, it's just station A versus station B on your train. But they are very different from your ordinary daily life. For your ordinary daily life, your goals are what? I want to get this, I want to enjoy it. I want to take this, I want to enjoy it. I want material stuff, I want gold, I want money, I want enjoyment, all of that. This is very different. Selfless sacrifice. Nobody can follow the spiritual path without giving up the sankalpa. So in this verse, he says, you must, without renouncing sankalpa, which is thought, obsessions, you cannot get anywhere. So that's very important that you've got to give that up. Nobody can say, well, I'm trying to meditate, but my mind isn't listening to me. It has all kinds of thoughts coming through. Of course it will. That's the first thing you need to go. Verse 3. For a seeker who wishes to master yoga, action is said to be the means, right? Karma.
Yep.
For the one who is established in yoga, quietude is supposed to be the means. So he's saying that once you're in the beginning stages, you need to do karma, selfless actions with sacrifice. Mm-hmm. Once you're there, you're at station B, you have to learn to be quiet. You've done your yoga, you've done your karma, you've done selfless sacrifice. Now you need to learn how to be quiet, to quiet your mind, so you can get to station C, which is the jnani. So all, when you have vairagya, when you do renunciation, all your desires, hopefully, should retire and move away. You become detached. It's like you're climbing a mountain. You want to keep going higher and higher. You don't want to fall back. But in life, things happen.
Right.
You fall back. But just like a mountain climber has a harness around him, when he falls, he's got to go back up. It's easier when you have that harness. And this practice, this meditation, this learning helps you as a harness does. When you have a lot of desires, you're not fit for knowledge. You haven't reached station B. You've started at station A. You've got a lot of desires and vasanas in you. You're not yet able to reach station B for sannyasa until you get rid of those desires. You're not fit for knowledge. Why? Because the mind is not interested in knowledge when it has all these other outwardly worldly interests. The world is there and you feel, I want to fulfill all those desires. When you have all those desires, you're not yet ready to give those up and to move on to the next stage. It's like going into a toy store with a child, right?
Mm-hmm.
You look at the child and you say, oh my God. And you say, okay, just look at these toys. Let's go. It doesn't work. The child is so drawn to all those little objects, those toys, you cannot pull them away. You may say, ah, these toys mean nothing to me.
Right.
So there's two distinct stages. And what he says is quietitude is necessary for the second stage. Verse 4. When a man is not attached either to sense objects or to actions and has renounced all thoughts, sankalpas, then he is said to be established in yoga. So the first sign of spiritual growth is when a person's desires change from outside worldly objects, sense or objects or things, and from the outside world, it goes to the inner self. His desires are not for outside things, but to gain knowledge, to gain quietitude, to gain peace of mind, to get rid of your vasanas, and to reach the self. When you have a burning desire for more and more of that, then that's the first sign of spiritual growth. And the worldly desires drop off, and you get detached from the sense objects and action. Now, to get something, right, we have trained ourselves that, you know, I want to get something, you need to take action.
Mm-hmm.
You want to come do well in sports, you say, okay, then go out and practice. Every morning, go outside and hit the tennis ball till you get good at the service or whatever. Similarly, anything, you want money, you say, go out and do this, start a business, get. So our attitude is always, if you want to get self-realization, go out and work at it. No, it's actually the exact opposite. The Atman you already have, the Atman is inside you. The Atman is you. For you to get a tennis trophy, you need to work hard. For you to get wealthy, you need to work hard. But to get the Atman, you need to give up all of that. You need to have quietitude. Since you already have it, you have to give up action. In meditation, you have to not respond to your eyes, your ears, your nose, anything like that. You go in with a child to that toy store that we were talking about. The child is pulled in all these directions, but you are not. Why? Because you have no desires for these toys. You actually are amused to say, this little kid is so taken by these little plastic toys that you say, Papi, can I have this? Can I have that? Can I have that? And you say, yeah, you know, but you're not taking it.
Right.
Similarly, as you start to get further and further in your spiritual growth, and I can promise you and tell you that from personal experience, that your desires for things that you never thought you'd get rid of, that these were so important to you at one stage, they just drop off. You are not interested in them anymore. I'm not saying that I've gotten rid of all of them, no way. But at least even if you move from station A to station A plus 15 yards, you've gone a lot.
Yeah.
You may not have gotten to station B, but it's a lot. So when a man is not attached either to sense objects or to actions and has renounced all his thoughts, then he's said to be established in yoga. So that, my friends, is the end of verse 4.
Can I
please
process this with you a little bit?
Absolutely.
Because as you've been speaking, what I've been thinking is you're describing the difference between seeking pleasure and seeking peace. That, in my mind, that's the way I'm kind of seeing the picture. Do you think that's fair and an interesting? Because sense objects, your sense organs, that's seeking pleasure. But when you're looking for quietude, you're seeking peace.
Yeah. So the Atman, you, Lou, me, every person that's listening to this, is said to be in Sanskrit, Sat, Chit, Anand. So we inherently are Sat, which is existence, Chit, which is consciousness. So these two, but I'm talking about Anand. Anand means happiness, bliss. What is said is that the bliss that is present in us when we don't have attachment to this world is so superior to the bliss of getting, you know, tens of millions of dollars and any sense objects here. So to answer your question, are we giving up pleasure? No, first question, at station A, you're exchanging pleasure for quietitude, yes, at an early stage. But that doesn't mean that when you get to self-realization, you have no pleasure.
Right, yeah.
You have only quietitude. They're saying that the person who has, as he goes along this journey towards self-realization, the bliss and pleasure gets to be very high even without any of these sense objects.
Right.
So you're not giving up. But you're right. In the beginning, we're seeking the pleasure of the sense objects and of the mind in this world. We're seeking worldly pleasures.
Right.
As we get further along, we seek not those pleasures, but internal pleasures. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Yeah.
Okay, good.
All right.
So find thank us, you, folks.
Yeah, find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify if you want audio only, any podcast outlet, really. If you want to contact us, the Facebook page, The Gita, Memoirs of a Psychiatrist.
Thank you all.